a southpaw who threw an overpowering fastball and dynamic curve. This Dodger ace recorded four no-hitters and once shattered the single-season strikeout record. His name, Sandy Koufax. Sandy Koufax had one of the most unusual careers of any legendary athlete. He pitched in the major leagues for only 12 years, and in half of those years, he was considered mediocre at best. But in his final 6 years, from 1961 to 1966, Koufax was as close to being invincible as any pitcher who ever played the game. He led the National League in earned run average 5 straight years. He led his team, the Los Angeles Dodgers, to 2 World Series titles. And 1 year, 1963, he was named the league's most valuable player. But what most people remember about Sandy Koufax was his ability to simply overpower hitters.
Sandy was a power pitcher. There's no question, power with a capital P. Had a great fastball, great curveball. At the end, he kind of played around a little bit with a little forkball and that. But, I mean, that was, he would play around with that when he had a little bit of a lead. When he got into trouble, he went back to fastball, curveball. And I think the thing that made him so tough to hit is because he threw them both so hard. And there was the extreme between the two was so great. I mean, a fastball, he'd ride a fastball up in here, and he'd start a curveball with a great velocity, and then it would go straight down. Well, if you're a hitter, you can't adjust that way. You could not, off of certain pitchers, a hitter can say, I'll look for that fastball, but I know I can still hit the curve. Not with Koufax. Not with a power pitcher. A power pitcher, you can't work that way. So, but every time he went out there, I mean, it would never surprise you to see him pitch a no-hitter because he was just that dynamic.
Sandy set a major league record by pitching 4 no-hitters, breaking the record of 3 set by Bob Feather. Koufax pitched his first no-hitter in 1962 and then pitched 1 in each of the next 3 years. His 4th no-hitter was especially remarkable in that it was also a perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. For all his heroics, Sandy was a shy, introspective man who disliked attention from the media. Today, he still avoids making public appearances.
Sandy likes to be alone. He doesn't like a lot of the public light. He'll do things that he has to do around his peers and around his own people. Sandy is one of the funniest guys you've ever been around. Well, the public doesn't know that. The public only knows the mystique that the writers have been able to print because that's all the writers know about Sandy Koufax. Sandy Koufax is a wonderful person. He just likes to be alone. And I've said, hey, people have asked me 1,000 times, I said, wait a minute. I said, everybody has their own way of living their life. I mean, we're here on borrowed time. It's short time, and that's the way that he wants to live, and that's the way it's going to be, and he's not going to change.
Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, Sandy's first love was basketball, not baseball. He starred on his high school's basketball team and received an athletic scholarship to the University of Cincinnati. In his freshman year at Cincinnati, Sandy tried out for the baseball team in the spring and made the team as a pitcher. Although his skills were unpolished, his blazing fastball gained the attention of several baseball scouts. The Dodgers offered Sandy a $14,000 signing bonus, and suddenly, this 19-year-old prodigy was playing for his home team, the Brooklyn Dodgers. Because of his large signing bonus, Sandy was required to play for the major league club for 2 years. Without the benefit of honing his skills in the minor leagues, Sandy's development was hampered. During his first 6 years with the Dodgers, from 1955 to 1960, Sandy saw spot duty and accumulated an unimpressive record of 36 wins and 40 losses. He was a hard-throwing pitcher who suffered control problems.
Pitching is so precise. To me, it's as precise as a golf swing because everything has to be in synchronization to have consistency. And I can't think of many other things. There's fine points of hitting, a little hitting zone like this. But when you get into pitching, you think of the whole body motion, the release point, and things like that. And that's what takes everybody. Some have a chance to, they pick it up earlier, and others it takes a little bit longer, and it took Sandy a little bit longer. But once he got that the complete body control together, I mean, he was awesome.
The turning point in Sandy's career came in the spring of 1961, when his catcher, Norm Sherry, suggested that he not throw so hard. Koufax soon discovered that by easing his pitching motion, not only did his accuracy improve, his velocity stayed the same. In the regular season that year, Sandy won 18 games and struck out 269 batters, breaking the National League record previously held by the legendary Christy Mathewson. Once considered a bust, Sandy was now on the verge of reaching his full potential. In his prime, Sandy Koufax had all the ingredients of a dominant pitcher. He threw a blazing fastball. He had a hard-breaking curve. And he threw both pitches with great accuracy. Mentally, he was just as tough.
A situation happened, and Lou Brock would be the one to tell you this story. And Jimmy LaFever, the manager now of the Chicago Cubs, was just a baby, came up with us his first year. And Brock walked. Sandy's pitching. Brock walked. He stole second. He stole third and scored on a fly ball. Now, they get a run without a hit. And Sandy is really hot. And because Brock kind of danced around a little bit, and it was in Lou's younger days. And Frenchie was sitting next to me in the dugout, and I had my arm up like this and around him. And Frenchie said, he says, Brock's lucky Sandy's pitching, he said, because doing all that dancing around, stealing those bases, he said, you know, he ought to go down. I said, well, I don't know how lucky he is, Frenchie. We'll see. And he came back up again. And Sandy hit him right in the middle of the back, right between the shoulder blades. He went down. He got up, as every hitter will. He got up, and he started to go to first base. He took one step, fell right flat on his face, and they carried him off on a stretcher. And he was out for a month. So beat Koufax. Don't embarrass him while you're beating him, because you're going to pay the price. Didn't do it very often. But that just happened that particular time, and I talked to Lou Brock about it. We'll see each other every now and then, and Lou says, I should have never done that. Steal, fine, but don't be jumping around like that.
In 1963, Sandy Koufax distinguished himself as one of the best pitchers in the league when he won 25 games and lost only five. He led the league with a 1.88 earned run average and set a National League record with 306 strikeouts. Sandy also led the Dodgers into the World Series, where they faced the powerful New York Yankees. In the opening game, Koufax was pitted against the Yankees ace, Whitey Ford. Sandy served immediate notice that he was on top of his game by striking out the first five batters he faced. Sandy would set a new World Series record by striking out 15 batters as Los Angeles defeated New York 5-2 in Game 1.
The first game of the 63 World Series with the Yankees, our scouting report said that can't pitch Richardson high. Bobby Richardson, the second baseman of the Yankees, and Sandy, you know, he was a high ball hitter, so keep the ball down on him. Don't pitch him high. Well, by the time the day was over, I think Richardson struck out four times and just wailing away at high fastballs up here. And he was just overmatched.
The Dodgers won the first three games. And in game four, Sandy Koufax and Whitey Ford battled each other again. Sandy allowed just one run on six hits, struck out eight batters, and went the distance as the Dodgers defeated New York 2-1. In sweeping the Yankees, Sandy Koufax demonstrated some of the finest pitching ever seen in World Series play. Not to be confused with a crafty or finesse pitcher, Sandy used brute power to overwhelm his opponents.
When I think of crafty, I think of Whitey Ford. Whitey was a crafty pitcher. Now, there's two guys in the Hall of Fame. Whitey was crafty. I mean, he would sink the ball and he would bring it in here, throw the good breaking pitch in here on your knees, change a little bit. Then he'd turn around and back you off and here and do things like that. Sandy wasn't like that. Sandy just said, you know, he was like a bull in a china closet. Here I am, hit it, boom, and here he came.
That year, 1963, Sandy earned his first Cy Young Award and was named the National League's most valuable player. In 1965, Sandy Koufax lived up to his reputation as the man with the golden arm. He struck out 382 batters, shattering the major league record. He led the league with 26 wins and had the league's lowest earned run average. That year, Sandy also pitched a perfect game against the Cubs for his fourth no-hitter, another major league record. Sandy earned his second Cy Young Award and capped off his brilliant year by leading the Dodgers into the World Series against the Minnesota Twins. With the series tied at 2-2, Sandy recorded 10 strikeouts and led Los Angeles to a 7-0 victory. In the seventh game, manager Walter Alston let Sandy start despite only 2 days' rest. Sandy rewarded his manager by pitching a three-hit shutout for a 2-0 victory and another World Series title. In the post-game celebration, there was no doubt who the series hero was.
But here's the fella who gave the Dodgers the championship. Sandy, in Los Angeles, when you pitched your 7-0 shutout, you were quoted as saying after the game, "I feel 100 years old." So today, how do you feel?
101.
101.
I feel great, Betty. I know I don't have to go out there anymore for about 4 months.
Sandy, it appeared from upstairs that your fastball was really your only pitch for quite some time.
Yes, it was. I don't know what it was today. I didn't have the curveball at all, and I wasn't getting it over. And I just stayed with the fastball and tried to get it in pretty good spots. And when I got the lead, I tried to keep him from pulling the ball if I could.
Most veteran newspaper men around the ballpark were watching to see when you and Drysdale arrived which of the two had already shaved, because it's traditional that the pitcher with the beard is going to pitch. But you and Drysdale both came in unshaven. When did you find out you were going to pitch today?
Well, I found out when we got here. That's why neither of us were shaved.
Well, you didn't know until you got here?
No.
Now tell me when you found out. Was it in front of the entire club?
Yeah.
Did the manager go over or what?
Yeah, Walt had a meeting, and he said that he thought he'd like to start the left-hander, and he had a reason for it. He said, if I have to make a switch, I'd rather go left, right, left, talking about Peronowski as his last man if he had to make two moves, then start the right-hander and go left, left. You don't change their lineup any when you do that.
Let's see. You've had four no-hitters, a perfect game. You've struck out 18. You have a World Series record of 15 in one game. Where does this one fit in as far as thrills are concerned?
I don't know, Vinny. This has got to be as high as any of them. This whole year was a thrill. We were a ball club that everybody said was going to finish fifth, and we lost Tommy Davis. They thought we were going to finish eighth.
Sandy, thank you so very much. And now go on back and sit down and relax a little while.
Thank you, Vinny.
Certainly, one of the greatest pitching duos in baseball history belonged to the Los Angeles Dodgers during the 1960s. From the left side, there was Sandy Koufax, a man capable of throwing a no-hitter on any given night. And from the right side, there was Don Drysdale, the tall sidewinder who threw a wicked fastball and slider. Just prior to the 1966 season, Sandy and Don made headline news when they staged a holdout together. They were demanding a bigger contract from the Dodgers' general manager, Buzzy Bavasi. Don Drysdale recalls how it all began.
Well, we basically had dinner one night, and my wife at the time, she was listening to us talk, and Sandy mentioned, you know, I could see something was bothering him. I said, hey, Koo, what's the matter? Yeah, I said, you try and be a nice guy and try and get things out of the way, and, you know, now they want to be smart about it. I said, what happened? And he said, well, I said, I go in and try and think I'm going to get my contract signed. They said, you know, how can we give you this much when Don only wants this much? Well, that was a year after the 65 season. We won 52 games between us. We beat Minnesota in the World Series. We're the world champions, and now we're going to 66. And I said, well, when did you go in and talk to him? He said, I went in today. I said, well, what other day did you go in? He said, I haven't. I said, you haven't? I said, what do you mean you haven't? He said, I haven't talked to him. I said, really? He said, I'm honest. So I said, well, that's interesting, because I said, I went in 2 days ago, and they told me the same story. They said, how can we pay you this when Sandy only wants this? And so right away at that time, my wife said, well, you know, that's easy to do. Why don't you go in together? So I looked at him, and, you know, in those days, no one ever went in together. You never talked salary. Nobody knew salaries or anything like that. And you did everything on your own. So he said, well, that's not bad. Let's do it. So we went in later on. We went in a few days later, and we saw Buzzy Bavasi, and here we come prancing into his office together. Well, his face, I mean, the look on his face, he couldn't believe it.
When Koufax and Drysdale held out together, they left the general manager little choice. After several weeks of negotiations, Bavasi came to terms with this dynamic duo, making Koufax and Drysdale the first pitchers ever to break the $100,000 barrier. In 1966, Sandy Koufax had another brilliant season. He led the league with 27 wins, 317 strikeouts, and had an earned run average of 1.73, which led the league for the fifth straight year. Sandy earned his third Cy Young Award and led the Dodgers to another World Series appearance. Hindered by some shaky fielding, the Dodgers lost to the Baltimore Orioles in four straight. While it had been known for several years that Sandy was pitching in pain due to an arthritic elbow, no one anticipated that this would be Sandy's last year, especially given his recent stellar performance.
Well, we all pitch in pain. You know, that's something that you just, that's part of the game. You know, your arm isn't made to pitch, and doctors will tell you that. And he was taking all of his things for his arthritic elbow and things like that, and, you know, we're all taking things for whatever pains that we had, and that's just part of it. And then after 1966, he just said that's it.
On November 16, 1966, Sandy called a hasty press conference to announce that at 30 years old, he was retiring from baseball. Even his closest teammates were surprised.
I was a little surprised. I was a little surprised, but I knew that it could be a grudge, maybe that's the right word. He carried an ill feeling inside of the holdout and of the year before when he had won, and he wasn't really that happy with the salary. I think that there was something in there, but he said that's it and walked away.
Sandy pitched only 12 years in the major leagues, and during the first 6 years he struggled with his control. But once he mastered the art of pitching, he became what some people consider the greatest pitcher the game has ever seen. 5 years after his retirement, Sandy Koufax was inducted into baseball's Hall of Fame. Long live Sandy Koufax, and long live his legend.